Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comic book, manga, graphic literature podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Andrew.
Hello, that's me.
And nobody else, because Mick isn't with us today.
Yep, Mick has vanished like an early 90s X-Men storyline.
Oh!
Boom!
Ouch! Was this an early 90s X-Men storyline from a comic book writer who can't draw feet?
I mean, this was like 30% of all early 90s X-Men storylines.
Yes, it was.
Do you remember the Externals, Rob? Because Marvel don't.
Nobody wants to remember the Externals.
I mean, literally all I remember about the Externals is one of them was called Gideon and he had a top knot ponytail.
Yes.
It was a bold fashion choice. It was bad. So bad.
I mean, don't forget, I went through 90s Hulk as well.
You did, and you did not survive the experience.
No, I was changed forever by the Stag Knight.
We've talked about those issues on the show before, haven't we?
Yes, we have. If you want to know more about them, just go hunt through the previous 100 and whatever shows.
Long story short, Peter David is a weird man.
And then some.
Mm.
Also, it was also the early signs of Hercules being an alcoholic at that point. Anyway, how are you this week, Andrew?
I'm good. Ready to dive deep into some good old comic-y comics.
Okay. You ready to climb down that black hole of comics, are you?
Yep, I've got my protective gear on. Got the rubber gloves.
Right. Okay, so take it away. You got the first news bit.
Yep. Well, before we start the news, though, we should probably announce that Deadpool 2 is out right now.
Yes, it is.
And we have done a hot, fresh, spicy review for it.
Yes, we have.
And if you want to listen to that, you can head over to our brothers in podcasty arms, Cinema Eclectica.
Yes.
Where we gatecrashed their episode to talk all things Deadpool.
Yes, and we didn't kidnap Rob at all. Those are violent.
He came of his own volition.
Well, we did have to feed him some interesting substances before.
He chose to eat those. He knew what he was getting into.
We told him they were M&Ms.
It's fine. We didn't burn him.
It's Andrew's idea.
We should probably talk about some comic book / comic book movie related news now.
Yes. So, Deadpool is out. Have we done that already?
We have done that already. It's okay, Rob. You have a sit down. Think about eating. Because you'll be able to do that at some point.
You don't know how hungry I am.
It's okay, big guy. Sun's getting real low.
Okay,
is that what that was about? Was the Hulk just fasting and he was like super hangry?
I think so. I just realised that as well. Oh, don't make me hangry.
Okay, so no, we're going to prove that we can stay on topic even when Mick isn't here. Right. Spider-Man Homecoming, in what is probably shocking news to no one, that film that was very successful is getting a sequel.
Yeah, which kind of proves that, somebody's coming back.
Yeah, we've got news that Michael Keaton will be returning as the Vulture.
Yep.
But he won't be the main villain, because that will be Mysterio, which, awesome.
Okay.
And secondly, awesome, he may be played by Jake Gyllenhaal.
Ooh, now that's interesting.
Yeah, I think he could be really fun, like definitely like super manic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I can see that working really well. The only thing is, I'm slightly disappointed it won't be Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, but then again, Jake Gyllenhaal, when he grows his beard out, does develop kind of a Bruce Campbell chin-like beard.
I mean, it's all right, but it's nothing compared to the author of If Chins Could Kill.
Yes.
But yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio, that is a good shout.
Yeah, I saw something interesting about Spider-Man, the Spider-Man sequel, that they were looking for a female lead.
I mean, I assume that they don't mean like a lead character, they mean like a main female character rather than a main character for the film who is a female.
Yeah, I think that's what they mean.
No, I guess, you know, Avengers 4 is going to warp reality, anything can happen.
Yeah, because it made me think, well, are they going to use Spider-Man Home, the sequel to Spider-Man Homecoming, to introduce Spider-Gwen? Silk?
Or a girl?
Yeah. Spider-Woman?
Yeah, or potentially just like Mary Jane or Gwen Stacy.
Mary Jane was in the first movie, though, wasn't she?
No, she wasn't, Rob. Shush your mouth. That doesn't count. Don't give me that. Oh, but my friends call me MJ nonsense. Bad Spider-Man Homecoming. 99% of You was delightful and one of my favourite movies, but that is a spray bottle to the face. A whap on the nose with a rolled up newspaper.
Yes, it was. I will agree with that. It's interesting that we're talking about Spider-Man Homecoming, because, the artist, Andre Lima Araujo? Is that how you say his name? A-R-A-U with a little thingy on top and then J-O. He's the artist for Ben Reilly's Scarlet Spider.
Yep, that's... I think by now people are aware that historically we are very bad at names.
Yes. Anyway...
Are we even pronouncing Peter Parker right?
Yes, Peter Parker is correct. I know that much. Anyway, he's actually come forward and he's shared a pitch that he put forward for a storyline he had dubbed Old Man Peter Parker. And the idea that he had was, it was during his Avengers AI run, and he developed the pitch for a Marvel story written and drawn by himself. It was a post-apocalyptic tale of old man Peter Parker going back to a destroyed New York, which is now run by King Venom and his symbiotic army. And you'd see Peter going through the city undercover and in the end fighting and defeating King Venom, taking New York back. No definitive answer was given by Marvel on whether they would actually think about doing this at any point. So,
okay, so I guess this would be like a prequel to Old Man Logan.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, because that's interesting that they didn't go for that then, because I know that they're doing an Old Man Hawkeye series at the moment.
Yeah, and it was funny because some of the sketches he's had for this, you've got Old Man Peter Parker, but you've got Old Man Matt Murdock and Old Man Frank Castle as well.
I really like Old Man Matt Murdock's kind of Daredevil-themed sweater vest.
Yes, I like that as well. Old Man Punisher is just basically Frank Castle, but older.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's just Frank Castle, isn't it?
Yeah. Although, I'm not sure, but you know where they've got the picture of Venom?
Yeah, but Venom looks kind of big.
Yeah, Venom looks kind of big, but there's a picture of a guy's head. Now, that
I see where you're going with this.
That hairstyle does look a lot like the Osborn hairstyle, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I assume. This should be like Norman Osborn. Got control of the Venom symbiote. I guess that would explain why it's kind of King Venom instead of like King Green Goblin.
Yeah. Oh, that might be interesting.
The other thing that strikes me as kind of weird is Peter Parker looks a lot older than Matt and Frank.
Yeah, and he's supposed to be younger than them by a good 10, 15 years, isn't he?
I don't know if I say 10, 15, because, oh no, we're going to try to sort out Marvel time.
No, 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 we're not going there.
No, I've got, so Peter Parker is like, I think he's canonically 28 years old.
Is that even in, like, Spider-Man Homecoming?
Well, I mean, like, comic book Peter Parker. Young adult, well, like, adult Peter Parker.
I was going to say, he can't be young adult and be 28 at the same time.
Look, I'm just saying, I'm 26, and if I keep calling it young adult, then it's not like I'm aging.
No, he's a young adult then.
But yeah, Matt and Frank are 30-something.
Well, Frank's been in the army, and he was, and it's been a while since his family was killed, and he became the Punisher.
Yeah, so he's at least like 35, right?
I'd say older. I'd say he's pushing 40 now.
I guess that makes it. It definitely seems like one of the older. Well, I was going to say one of the older ones, but then you've got people like Captain America.
Yeah.
I guess Galactus, and comparatively, everyone is a baby.
Not only that. Frank Castle also served in Vietnam, didn't he?
Not anymore.
Not anymore?
Well, no, he'd have to be, like, God knows how old to have served in Nam.
Yeah, true. But I keep forgetting. They've changed it to, like, the Iraq War, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. So that's, like, what, early 2000s?
So he would be pushing 40 now.
He's got to be. Because he's, like, he's got a wife and a kid, so he... So they're 30-ish when they die.
Yeah.
This is...
we haven't
this is Kevin
that.
Spacey's origin from 7, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is how he wound up just writing things all over his wall. Trying to figure out how old comic book characters are.
Either that or it's Jim Carrey in the number 23. We just everything boils down to the number 23.
Yes, that's it. Everyone is 23. There we go.
All right, moving
even
on.
Even Nick Fury. Even Franklin Richards is 23 years old.
Everybody's the same age.
Yes.
Oh, is this that overarching? No, no, because that's DC. That overarching storyline where 10 years has gone missing.
No, because there are missing times in Marvel.
Oh, God.
There's like 8 months either side of Secret Wars.
But how
that's
do we know?
Nearly a whole extra year.
Yeah, but how do we know which planet that those 8 months are on? Because remember, a year is different depending on which planet you're on, isn't it?
So, right, if you pick up an issue of New Avengers, so it's 8 months later, but if like you magnify and magnify in teeny tiny print, it's 8 years later, Neptune time.
Something like that, yeah.
Look, we say this, but apparently the canonical explanation is time is broken in the Marvel Universe.
Yes, that's the simple solution.
Reed Richards fought in World War II. That was weird.
Yeah. Also, Neptune is a good choice for your year, by the way, because it's got the longest year of any planet, which is the equivalent of 1 year on Neptune is the equivalent of 164.8 years on planet Earth.
Hey, so apparently Donald Glover is in talks to have a role in Black Panther 2.
Really?
Yeah, which, I mean, isn't that surprising because he is a pretty hot property at the moment.
Yeah, he is. There's that music video, there's Solo, there's all sorts of other stuff. So, yeah, I was actually surprised that he wasn't in the first Black Panther, I'll be honest.
I keep thinking he was, but he wasn't. I think I get confused because he was in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. I have to stop and think there. But hang on, if he was in Spider-Man Homecoming and Black Panther and Spider-Man are in the same universe, how can he be in, oh, unless his character is the one that's going to be in Black Panther 2?
I think they'll probably just recast him. Because like, it's not like he had a huge role or anything.
True. I forgot, what was his role in Homecoming?
He was a gangster guy who was trying to buy weapons.
That was it, yeah.
Off the shocker, and then Spider-Man saves him, and then later he interrogates him, and they talk about sandwiches. And he's also maybe the uncle of Miles Morales. Mm. Which, I mean, guess would mean he would suddenly get quite an important role if they did introduce Miles into the MCU.
Yeah? But, I mean,
or maybe there's just two people in the Marvel Universe who look very similar.
It happens in real life. Apparently there's a English version of me. Well, apparently there's a white version of me and a African-American version of me. So
that's weird.
I've seen a Chinese version of Rob from Cinema Eclectica.
But anyway, basically, I would be happy with them using Donald Glover because that means they could reuse other actors that they have absolutely wasted.
What, like?
Because they made Mads Mikkelsen a generic villain, Rob.
Yeah, they did. They did. I mean, he deserved better. He deserved a role like Michael B. Jordan's role in Black Panther.
Yeah, which, oh, that's another thing. He might be making a return appearance.
How? He's dead.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe he's a spooky ghost or something.
I forgot. This is Marvel we're talking about.
Yeah. Or he just comes back to life. Maybe he'll do, like, my least favourite thing in comics. Well, they'll just randomly bring back a character and they'll have another character go, hey, weren't you dead? And then that character will basically say, yeah, but shut up.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, God, I have literally no idea who he could play.
I'm just racking my brains. I'm thinking, it's impossible for him to play anybody but Killmonger now. You can't have him playing anybody but Killmonger because...
Oh, no, I'm on Donald Glover.
Oh, right, I'm on about Michael B. Jordan if they bring him back.
Oh, yeah, no, like, if he comes back, I'm sure he will come back as, like, a hologram of Killmonger or a hallucination.
Yeah, something like that. Because you couldn't have Michael B. Jordan come back and play any other character. It's like having Tom Hiddleston play anybody except Loki.
Yeah, like, they're definitely the villains who are kind of iconic.
Yeah.
But, like, you could bring back Christopher Eccleston as well. Does really anyone remember Malekith?
No, people would rather forget, including Christopher Eccleston.
Like that's probably my least favourite thing about Thor Ragnarok, is it's that slight brain pain you get from having to remember that, oh wait, Thor the Dark World did happen.
Yeah. I think that's the one big problem with the Infinity Stones and the Infinity War in general, is just the fact that you have to remember Thor the Dark World happened. There's a reason for it.
I feel like that's why the reality gem isn't used that much in that film.
Yes. Oh, but...
And also the fact how it's suddenly gone from, like, creates a weird blood tree throughout the universe to... It just changes reality.
Yeah. You know, some changes are bigger than others. You know, Maybe for the big changes it has to create that weird blood tree throughout reality.
Sure, why not?
Anyway, it's interesting we're talking about Infinity War and Malekith and everything like that. Because have you ever wanted to look like is it Malekith or Malekith?
I thought it was Malekith.
I thought it was Malekith, but they pronounced it Malekith, didn't they?
Did they? I don't know. That would require me remembering things about Thor the Dark World.
Well, would you like to have a hairstyle like him?
Does he have hair?
I don't know.
I mean, I know the comic version has absolutely fabulous hair.
Yes, yes, he does.
But I distinctly remember the movie version not having that giant sort of long quiff.
What about Gamora's hair? If you could have those red flowing locks.
I mean, are those my only two choices?
No, you could have Agent Carter's, bouncy curls from the 1940s.
Wait, no, I've got it. I want Yellow Jacket's hair.
He's bald, wasn't he?
See, I was going to say Weldon, that was the joke, but I realised he was such a non-entity. Yes, you probably do have to double-check that he was a guy who was bald.
That was the thing. I was trying to remember, did Yellow Jacket have hair? I can't actually remember what he looked like.
I think literally I only remember him because he was that guy from House of Cards.
Kevin Spacey?
No, the other dude, Corey Stoll.
Corey Stoll what?
The Yellow Jacket armor. Keep up, Rob. God.
Oh, right. So his name was appropriate then. That's like the easiest way, the easiest investigation. Who stole the Yellow Jacket armor? What's your name, Corey Stoll? And what did you steal?
And because there are copies required by law to answer truthfully.
Anyway, yeah. Walt Disney World Resort over in Orlando, they've decided to offer a new set of character couture packages where you can get things like Chris Hemsworth's lightning bolt undershave. That undershave is an actual word, apparently. I've never seen this word before. I don't know what an undershave is.
Do they shave it in the exact same way in which a cyborg Stan Lee comes out and just like pops 1,000 saws out of his arm and hacks apart his hair?
No, you know that weird V thing that Chris Hemsworth had in the side of his head in Thor Ragnarok when he went into the arena. That is
I would say that was a good look, but I feel like that was a good look because it was happening on Chris Hemsworth.
Yes. Apparently that's also called an undershave. I did not know this.
Well, we're learning new and exciting hair facts.
Well, I mean, undershave, the word just conjures up like, shaving your bits. So, that's the thing that confused me there. Anyway, Scarlett Johansson's bald curls from Iron Man. You can have Glenn Close's stellar updo from Guardians of the Galaxy if you want.
Which, obviously, yes, I do want.
Yeah. These are going to be offered in Walt Disney World salons at Walt Disney World Resort in Orlando. And they're going to be offered alongside the already existing packages, which include Disney Princesses, Villains, and Star Wars. So you could have your hair styled like Boba Fett's helmet, possibly.
I mean, I would guess so.
Thing is,
I feel like in a lot of these things, the people don't have like that. A lot of it seems to just be like natural hair quality.
Yeah, but I mean, if you walked in there and said, I want my hair to look like Boba Fett's helmet, and they could do it, would you have a haircut that was made your head look like Boba Fett's helmet?
Yes, but I feel it's cruel to taunt me with dreams like that. Also, how does that work? Is it just like the back of the helmet, or do they comb it over the front and style it so it's like the visor?
I don't know, but you know that afro cut that they do where it makes the guy look like he's wearing a cap?
Yes, but I feel like these are not equivalent things, Rob.
They're not equivalent things, I'm saying. It'd be more elaborate than that, and they'd have to have like loads of, fixing gel and maybe some pieces of cardboard or something. I don't know. But I'm sure they could make it work.
What if I want Groot's hair? Will they just like glue bits of wood to my forehead?
I don't know. Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm going to show you this, right? You are not going to believe this. But I must show you this. I've just Googled Boba Fett hairstyle, and this was one of the first results that came up.
Oh my God, they actually did it. That looks appalling.
I know.
Because, like, it's just the dude's nose and mouth sticking out.
It's just looking at her going, no.
Job would work, though.
What?
Judge Dredd hairstyle.
See, I want to Google that now. It's getting Googled. No, because of
RoboCop haircut.
This is like Celebrity Heights. It's something that you're going to fall into, isn't it?
Just thinking, what weird thing would I want my hair styled as? What about Black Bolt? Can I get like a little tuning fork stuck in my head?
Oh, now you're making me search.
Oh, no. Do you think they do facial hair as well?
Why?
Do you think there's going to be a legion of guys with just terrible Doctor Strange goatees?
Well, there was a legion of guys with terrible Tony Stark goatees after Iron Man.
There were. But then again, why would you even bother with that when you could get a Captain America beard?
Actually, that's something that I wanted to ask you about. Because he does look a lot like Hobo Captain America after the Capwolf saga.
He does, but sadly, he definitely wasn't.
No, but we don't know what he did in the intervening period between Civil War and Infinity War, do we?
That's right. That's right, Marvel. You can't tell us that Capwolf isn't MCU canon.
Yes, because now he looks like he did at the end of Capwolf. So maybe in that intervening time, he had his werewolf adventure with random vampire US agent, because hell, it was after Civil War, so they would have introduced somebody like that, wouldn't they?
See, I feel like this works, because after that happened, he definitely would have turned to the rest of the Avengers and just said, we will never speak of this.
Yes! And also, we know werewolves are, you know, they're physically strong, and if you mix werewolf with, you know, with Super Soldier, you know, Super Soldier werewolf, it explains how we could hold Thanos off like that.
I'm just thinking about the possibilities of getting Marvel haircuts. I mean, obviously Spider-Man is off the table, because no mere human has that hair volume.
Yeah, true. And Medusa's off the table as well.
I mean, all you need for that is just a cheap plastic wig.
Yeah, we're not talking about the TV series Medusa.
Okay, well then, all you really need to do is just paint some snakes orange and, like, sellotape them onto the head.
That's...
See, you should have hired me, Scott Buck. I could have saved you so much more money.
Oh, Peter going to have a field day with that one, aren't they? But they're animals.
Probably all the people who do health and safety for TV shows.
Yeah, but they're animals. Okay, you take them away then. But they're poisonous. You're the one who told us we can't use them. Oh, anyway, shall we move on before we get bogged down in this?
We shall move on, because... I mean, you say before we get bogged down in this. Long after we've got bogged down in this. So yeah, HBO's Watchmen, that's still a thing they're insisting is going to happen.
Why?
No matter how much I try to drink to forget.
It's the obvious question. Why? We've had Watchmen. It was all right. Wasn't the best, but, you know, it served a purpose. Job done.
Yeah, but apparently this isn't actually Watchmen. Because according to a letter that Damon Lindelof has sent out, it's not going to be an adaptation of Watchmen. In his words, it's going to be a remix.
A remix?
Yep. This story will be set in the world its creator has painstakingly built, but in the tradition of the work that inspired it, this new story must be original. It has to vibrate with the seismic unpredictability of its own tectonic plates, must ask new questions and explore the world through a fresh lens. More importantly, it must be contemporary. The tone will be fresh and nasty and electric and absurd.
So, does he think he's the Skrillex of superhero movies?
God, it's an electric remix of Watchmen. It is Skrillex.
It is, isn't it?
It's terrible. We'll be waiting for the bass to drop and it never will.
No, it'll be like New Mutants all over again. As Josh Brolin says, dubstep never dies. Oh.
So I guess the takeaway is not... But it's not Watchmen, but also it's not a sequel to Watchmen. So this is basically going to be like, I don't know, some kind of detective show. But in the first episode, someone's going to say, hey, remember that time in the 80s where a giant squid destroyed most of the world? Wasn't that weird?
So basically, the way I'm envisioning this, okay, and feel free to jump in and correct me, but the way I'm envisioning this is he's going to film a bunch of people standing around talking about stuff that happened, and then it's going to cut to scenes from the Watchmen movie that are referring to those people, what those people are talking about, and then it'll go back to those people talking. and then maybe choose random action scenes from other movies. I don't know, some 1980s action films and stuff like that. Maybe some Hong Kong martial arts cinema and blend them all together into some kind of remix and say, yay, this is the new Watchmen.
It's what, Heroes. What if it's Watchmen?
It's Heroes Season 3, isn't it? That's what he's making.
I don't even know. I'm very confused. I feel like what he's saying is it's going to be like set in the world where Watchmen happened, but also not actually related to Watchmen.
So, hang on, Watchmen have already happened or Watchmen are going to happen? Is this Minutemen or is this Watchmen?
No, I think this is Watchmen.
I'm very confused at the moment.
Yeah, because he specifically says that this is in which Watchmen has happened.
So it's the future then?
Yeah, I mean, it almost sounds interesting. The idea of just exploring, like, the world that Ozymandias created, but also, no, it's basically going to be an entire series of, like, that weird thing that sometimes Arrow and shows like that do.
Yeah.
Where they go, like, oh no, there's some kind of villain around. If only there was some kind of, like, Dark Knight or Man of Steel that could help us.
Ah, right, that one. Or as, I've watched Deadpool again, by the way. Or as Ryan Reynolds puts it, foreshadowing.
Yes. Or just lazy writing.
Yes, lazy writing is the other one. I love those bits. As you can tell, we did like Deadpool 2.
We did indeed.
Yes.
Anyway, we also have a cast list for Watchmen.
Oh.
So there are 6 actors in the lead roles, with the main character being played by Vagina King.
Okay.
Then we also have Don Johnson, Crockett from Miami Vice, Tim Blake Nelson, Louis Gossett Jr., Adelaide Clemens, and Andrew Howard.
Okay, I immediately have to put my hand right in the air and ask a question, teacher.
Yes.
Where the hell did they dig Louis Gossett Jr. up from? That's a name I haven't heard in like 10 years.
I think like they had to go to some like California retirement home, just lift him, wicker rocking chair and doll, and just like put him in the back of a van.
I mean, the last time I saw Louis Gossett Jr. in any movie was in one of those weird 1980s Top Gun ripoff movies called Iron Eagle.
And now he's going to be in this.
Wow. I mean, they've got Don Johnson in there as well, so it is like an 80s nostalgia fest automatically. Just got the two of them there.
Actually, yeah, maybe that's the point. Like, because Watchmen was set in the 80s, they've kind of got guys who are famously from the 80s.
If that's what they're going for, then yeah, great.
Yeah, and also Adelaide Clemens, who I mainly know from all those times I get confused and think she's Carey Mulligan, but she isn't.
it's actually a bit of a toss-up when you first look.
Just they look so alike.
I know. Which brings us back to that whole thing about doppelgangers.
But yeah, this can't be actual Watchmen then.
No.
Because who in the Watchmen cast is Don Johnson going to play?
Please don't be Dr. Manhattan. Please don't be Dr. Manhattan.
So yeah, I'm so confused by this, Rob.
I'm just, I'm sorry, my brain is shut down at the thought of Don Johnson's giant blue sausage. It's...
Oh, no.
My mind is gone. Shall we move on? Please move on, please.
But that was the last news bit I had.
Okay, I'm going to have to suffer through this over the break.
Yep, we're just going to have to leave it hanging there.
You would have to say that.
Absolutely.
Hi, this is Krillin. And this is Usopp. And you're listening to The Geek Show.
All of our shows are available on Audioboom and Apple Podcasts, and very soon YouTube as well. What was I going to say? If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or our own Twitter, which is Andrew
at 4PanelPodcast.
Or you can find us you can contact us direct on studio@thegeekshow.co.uk.
The Geek Show is the largest independent podcast network out there. And to be independent, we need a little bit of help every now and again. So if you want something to show your love of The Geek Show, head over to thegeekshow.co.uk, click on the shop and buy some of our lovely wares. Buy them all.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
Welcome back, and now it's time for comics and manga, and we're starting off with Andrew.
Yep, and I am going to get the one I didn't like out the way first, because for my sins, I've been reading Volume 2 of America, which was still written by Gabby Rivera, with art mostly by Joe Quinones, but also with some help from Jen Bartel, Annie Wu, Ming Doyle, Howard Koch, Joe Rivera, Flaviano, and Stacey Lee.
So, I've got to ask, when you say America, you're not on about, like, Donald Trump America or America, yeah.
Nope, this is America Chavez, the series that I covered a little while ago when we had Volume 1.
Ah, right. America Chavez being that dimension-jumping lassie who can travel through time and space. Like a human TARDIS.
Dimension-jumping lassie.
Yes. I mean lassie as in, you know, how an old Scotsman would refer to a
young
woman.
Yeah, no, like, neither usage of the word lassie is in any way good here.
I couldn't think of what to call her.
But yeah, I feel like I'm in the same bind as when I read Volume 1. And that, like, I realise that for some people this is a very important book. Because it's a queer Latina character written by a queer Latina writer, and there are people like who can see this as, oh hey, there's finally a superhero who is like me and take inspiration from this, and that's great and all.
Yeah.
But also I'm not, and I can only really cover this from the perspective of someone reading this purely for entertainment value.
And from that perspective?
It's not a fun comic, Rob. It's a bad, not good time. Because I just feel like Gabby Rivera, she's not that well suited to a comics writing style.
Is it her first comic, though?
Yeah, it is. And I think that really tells.
Yeah, you can generally tell. I mean, when people write their first story, there's usually a lot of problems with it, because it'll be like a lack of experience, a lack of experience with maybe just situations, or a lack of experience with expressing themselves through words and pictures.
Well, no, to be fair, I don't think this is that, because it's Gabby Rivera. She is a novelist. But I think this is more, there's clearly been a jump between mediums where a lot of her skills kind of aren't coming into play.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, you don't really have that all omniscient sort of third person narrator through which you can describe what the events of the book are. And so in things like this, you get just lots of characters basically, you know, saying, hello, my name is this character, this is what my motivation is, now I am going to describe the thing that we are doing.
So basically it is, hello, my name is Iñigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die.
Yeah, basically, if this was set in a world where everyone introduces themselves with their full name and what their driving character motivation is, but also not as amazing as that sounds.
Hello, my name is Brian. I am the butcher. I will sell you meat now.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the other dialogue, it's, there's nothing as like cringe-inducingly awful as there was in the first volume with lines like, holy menstruation.
Yeah, that one's not a good one.
No, it really isn't. But it's just kind of bland. Like, I don't really find myself caring about any of these characters, because none of them really seem to have a character to care about. That's pretty much just, there is America, who is great and the best at everything, and other people who are there to tell America that she is great and the best at everything.
So it is America! Yeah!
In a sense, yes. That being said, there was one character I actually did quite enjoy.
Oh?
The Exterminatrix, who's the villain for kind of quite a few of these issues, and actually enjoyed, because it's almost kind of like all the weird awkward lines from the first volume, but coming out of a character who, like, where it makes sense. Because the Exterminatrix, she is dressed, you know, in all leather. She's got, like, weird lips for eyes.
Ooh.
And kind of, you know, high heels, stockings. And she just say things like, tell those investors to take the ball gag out of their mouths. They'll get back to licking my boots soon enough. And that's super inappropriate, and I kind of like it.
Sorry, it's the weird lips for eyes bit I'm still stuck on.
Yeah, it's like, she wears a mask, and it's got, like, eye bits, but, like, lips around the eye bits.
That sounds horrible.
But they're not, like, realistic lips, kind of like lipsticky lips.
It still sounds awful.
Yeah, it is weird, and it is kind of hard to think, that is a woman with mouths for eyes.
Wow.
But yeah, it's just, America is not the worst comic I've ever read, but it's just, it's a chore. So it's one of those things where I'm very much aware that I am reading this because I have to read this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it also doesn't help that there's a ton of different artists. So I think it's like issue 7, yeah, where it has 6 different artists.
That's not a good sign when you have that many artists on one comic.
No, and it makes it awkward with the abrupt change. And they are, like, noticeably different artists as well. So there's lots of jarring shifts between styles.
Hmm. So not a recommend from you, then?
No, it's not a recommend, but I also realise that for some people, everything I've said is entirely not the point of the book.
Yeah, I get that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, if you want people to... If you want something to be a clarion call, then why shouldn't it be good?
Yeah, I didn't like it. That's my 2 cents. And also, the series is cancelled now, so who even cares?
Yeah.
Bosh.
Yes. Anyway. I have something...
Also, notice how I didn't say much about what the plot of the story was.
Yes, I know, because you don't care enough.
No, because it was super boring, and I forgot.
That's fine. Right, moving on to me, I have a couple of manga today, and the first one is a very kind of small manga, which is Cheese Sweet Adventure, which is created by Konami Kanata and adapted by Kinoko Natsume. And Cheese Sweet Adventure is basically a little kind of 4-panel manga series, a 4-panel slice of life comedy manga series about a little kitten called Chi. And Chi lives with her family, her adopted family, because she got lost when she was from her mother when she was really, really young. And she got adopted by this family now. And so she lives with Ryo here, who is the only son of this family. And she lives with the mum and the dad and Ryo here. And she does cat things in cat ways every day. But she's a kitten, so she doesn't know much about the world. She's still learning. And so she does all the kind of stupid things that a kitten does, you know, like just rolling about on the floor for no reason at all, just to attract your attention, or, you know, walking across your keyboard while you're doing loads of work and then thinking that they've helped in some way.
I mean, I feel like you say kittens, I say all cats.
Yeah.
I think that they just learn. Initially, they do it out of childish innocence. Eventually, they do it out of spite.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I like about this, right, I first got introduced to this character years ago in the first anime series for this, which we called Cheese Sweet Home. And I thought it was really cute then, but it's definitely aimed at a younger audience. And this is still the same. It's cute. It's aimed at a younger audience. There are some jokes in there that adults, that more mature people, will get. And there's nothing wrong with somebody my age reading this and enjoying it, because it is approachable for any age. It's basically an all-ages manga, right? And it's in colour all the way through, which is a rarity for manga.
Oh, that is rare.
And it, you know, it covers a lot of things, but everything is done in this kind of tongue-in-cheek, light-hearted manner. You know, there's no actual danger or anything like that. Nobody's going to die or anything like that. And because you're safe in the knowledge of that, you can sit down with, you know, your nephews or your nieces or your kids, if you've got them, or even your younger siblings, and you can give this to them to read, and they'd enjoy it because it's got a kitten as the lead character. So I've got to say, credit to Konami Kanata and to Kinoko Natsume for A, creating it, and B, adapting it in such a superb way. It is enjoyable. A lot more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think it's always commendable when someone can make, especially a comedy, that is actually something anyone of any age can enjoy.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing, because it's, Chi looks adorable, you know? And I think that's what sells it, because you can forgive a lot of the things. It's like, you know, when you look at cat videos on the internet and you see a cat doing something stupid, but literally maybe 30 seconds before, it's been hissing at maybe its owner and wanting to tear his face off.
Yeah, that is the dark side of cat videos that we never see.
Yeah, and Chi's Sweet Adventure is kind of like all of that. You don't see, you only get flashes of like the dark side of things, but it never goes beyond that. So you know there is kind of there is this darkness that's out in the real world, and Chi is being protected from it by her family and by the other cats that she knows and the other animals she knows.
That just sounds nice.
It is. It's nice. That's all it's trying to be, and it does it in spades.
That's good. Well, now that you've done your nice and lovely one, shall I move on to my nice and lovely one?
Yes.
Well, I can't, because that was a fake out. Actually, I'm going to talk about Aliens Dead Orbit. So this is a book that I think I just took from you as part of a big old pile of comics.
Yes, you did.
Without really seeing, you know, who was doing this. Turns out this is written and drawn by James Stucoe, who is an artist that I love. He is the guy who did Godzilla the Half-Century War.
Oh, you love that.
Yes, and the bits in Moon Knight, you know, where it's like he's on the moon and he's a space fighter pilot fighting the wolf people.
Wow.
Moon Knight is a weird book to try and explain, like, a little bit of.
Yes.
And yeah, this is him doing a story about the aliens from Aliens. And it's set on sort of an orbiting space station where a group of engineers intercept a call from kind of an old junked up spaceship. And when they look inside, they find a bunch of people in cryostasis. So they take them aboard. And would you Adam and Eve it? They got them aliens inside them.
Oh.
So then there's some chest bursting and then some big spooky monsters running around in the vents. Basically, it's obviously very heavily inspired by the original Alien.
Hmm, okay. But does it have that claustrophobic feel of the original Alien?
Oh, it's super claustrophobic.
Okay, that's good. Because that's not something that you can really achieve that well in a comic book, is it?
No, I think Stucoe does a good job because everything he draws is so detailed. So you really get a good sense of like all these massive, huge computers like shoved into a cramped space. You know, these very tightly packed narrow corridors.
I think I'm going to have a read of this, because I was supposed to do this given that I usually do the Aliens, Predator, that sort of thing stuff. But then you said, you kind of put yourself forward and went, okay.
Yeah, that's right. I think I just grabbed it because I fancied doing something that wasn't Marvel.
Fine by me.
I've been doing a lot of Marvel.
Fine by me. I get sick of doing Marvel and DC as well.
Yeah, just got the art so good. Because it's clearly, like, very heavily anime-inspired, but, like, in a good way.
Awesome. It's not very chibified. Good. It's not, like, super-deformed anime characters, is it, where they make them look tiny?
No, it's people who actually look like people, but also explode like meat piñatas.
That's not very tasty, is it?
It is if you're a xenomorph, who, incidentally, they look great in this.
Hmm.
Like, I think Stucoe, he's very good at drawing things that look, like, just off. Like, there's this really kind of bendiness to them. It's very unsettling.
Hmm. I think I'm going to have to see this. Bring it with you so I can have a look.
I think my only complaint is this maybe a little bit in the middle where I kind of wish that they hadn't cut out, because it kind of jumps from the chest bursters kind of coming out of some people and running off to a while later, and now the crew are being hunted by the aliens. And I feel like I would have liked a little bit more build up in between that.
Hmm, yeah.
But I think that's where they just had to cut something for length's sake.
That actually sounds fair enough.
Yeah. Actually, I really hope James Stucoe does another one of these. Because at the back of the book, he details sort of what his original pitch for the series was. Well, it was much more inspired by Aliens, the sequel.
This time it's war.
Yeah, it's about a group of colonial marines. Some of them get trapped in an underground research facility that's like a giant labyrinth, and they're stuck in there with a bunch of xenomorphs.
Ooh.
And that also sounds really cool.
Ouch. Yeah, it does sound cool, though. Ah, I'm going to have to read this. I really want to read it now. I wish I hadn't given it to you.
Should also, something very exciting. I think probably Mike Mignola did an Aliens vs. Predator comic.
Why?
Because he's Mike Mignola. He does what he wants. And it's always great.
Sorry, I misheard you. You said Aliens vs. Predator. For some reason, I heard Aliens vs. Robocop.
That's... I mean, I feel like you do have Robocop on the brain a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I might have to find that.
Aliens vs. Predator, though. I think
by Mike Mignola.
I might actually have that. I will have a dig around.
Well, I don't know. You might have one of the Aliens vs. Predators books.
Yeah, it might not be the one by Mike Mignola, though.
Speaking of, I managed to pick up the DC Universe by Mike Mignola on Comixology.
How was it?
I haven't read it yet, but I was mainly going to say, because it's part of a Memorial Day sale, got it for like £4.
Oh, wow.
And it was about 20.
Wow.
Making those savings.
Yes, you are.
Ah. Also picked up All-Star Superman for like £3.
That would have been worth it.
It was worth it. Comixology is great.
Yes, it is. Is it my turn?
Yeah, go on. I'm going to keep just flicking through pages of Dead Orbit.
I've got Watakoi, Love is Hard for Otaku, right? Now, this is a story of Narumi Momose, who has had it rough. Every boyfriend she's had has dumped her once they found out she was an otaku, so she's gone to great lengths to hide this fact. When a chance meeting at her new job with her childhood friend, fellow otaku and now co-worker Hirotaka Nifuji, almost gets her secret outed at work, she comes up with a plan to make sure that he never speaks up. But he
is
comes
it to murder him?
Not quite. But he comes up with a counter proposal. Why doesn't she just date him instead? And right, it sounds like a horrible premise, doesn't it?
It does. I was going to say that sounds really like awful and pickup artisty.
Yeah, and this is written by Fujita, and the artwork is actually quite interesting. It's kind of a cross between the shoujo-esque style, but without the kind of sparkles and flowers, for the most part. The interesting thing about it, though, is that it's not what I expected. Not at all. I thought this was going to be a typical kind of shoujo romance where, boy and girl meet and then fall in love, blah, 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 cue the wedding bells, stuff like that, with a dash of otaku thrown in there. But what it is actually, it's actually a very, very charming and very sweet comedy series. And some of the comedy is just superb. I really didn't expect it. I mean, you've got the two main characters. You've got Hirotaka and Narumi as the two main characters. But they've got, they've got co-workers who they know Hirotaka is a video game otaku, right? And when historically... Narumi and Hirotaka, she liked anime and manga, he liked video games. They're both otaku, but for otaku for different things. And because they were otaku for different things, they never really clashed. And they always got on. They ended up like the best of friends when they were kids. And then they drifted apart. And now they're back together again. And possibly dating. Probably dating. Definitely dating. That's how it goes in this story. But they've got co-workers. Hanako Kayanagi and Taro Kabakura. And Taro and Hanako, they actually end up as a couple as well. But they have this weird combative relationship, which is different from Hirotaka and Narumi's. Hanako and Taro's relationship is kind of built on spite. Don't know if that makes sense. They kind of love each other, but hate each other at the same time.
Just like us.
Yes. And so, they'll be really sweet to each other. But if you ask them questions like, so which of you said I love you first? They'll both point at each other and go, that one. And then it'll be the cue for a fight between the two of them. And then
I'm just going to say that sounds perfectly healthy and move on.
Yeah. Then you got Narumi, who, because she's into anime and manga, she ended up as a fujoshi, which means she's into the whole kind of yaoi BL stuff. Hirotaka is happy to live with that side of her, although it does give him reservations because she keeps wanting to doll him up. Hirotaka's younger brother is interesting because he's the complete opposite of Hirotaka. He is just really, 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 really bad at video games, which freaks out everybody in their little social circle when they realize this guy is not an otaku in any way, shape, or form. What do we do now? What do we talk about? Crap, 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 crap. I don't know what to talk about with somebody who's a normie. That sort of stuff.
I mean, normies are the worst.
That sort of stuff. The thing is, in between bits of story, because this is told like a slice of life thing, so you have different chapters that have different bits of story, but then in between that is it turns into kind of little sketch comedies, and one of them, this one is absolutely superb. You've got Taro and Hanako, and Taro and Hanako, they're looking at each other, but they're not talking, and Taro's looking at Hanako, Hanako's looking at Taro going, oh, I love him, and I want to kiss him right now, and yada, yada, yada. And Taro's looking at Hanako going, she looks like she needs a dump. And they're not saying anything to each other. And Hanako's thinking, I really want to kiss him. I'm going to kiss him. I'm going to kiss him now. And Taro's going, I think she's getting angry because she needs a dump and she's embarrassed because I'm here. Maybe I should go. Then Hanako says to him, can I do it? He goes, yeah, go ahead.
That's... yeah, that sounds about par for the course.
Exactly. And I love the fact that it's just, there's bits in this that clearly the characters are misunderstanding each other. And because you're the observer, you're reading their story, you get to see the misunderstanding play out to its glorious and obviously, comedic conclusion. And they have bits in this where, they do like the RPG sketch from Gintama and various things like that. It's actually, I'm surprised just how much fun I had reading this. It wasn't what I expected at all.
Oh, I am glad to know that it was better than you were expecting.
It's a lot better than I was expecting. I was going to suggest maybe you want to have a look at this, because it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I might do. And I was going to recommend you have a look at America, because everyone should suffer.
I don't want to.
I mean, I say that. I read this like 2 days ago and I barely remember anything that happened in it. Okay. That America is just, she's so special.
That's my point. I don't really want to.
But you don't understand, Rob. She's so great at everything.
Really?
Everything. And everyone loves her.
See, the thing is...
For reasons I'm not entirely sure about.
See, the thing is, you can't see what I'm doing right now. I'm basically doing one of those finger tricks and going, can she do this?
Yes, and she can do it better than you.
Hang on, she is not Shatterstar.
She can Shatterstar better than Shatterstar.
I just realised she does the star thing.
She literally does. That is her all day, every day.
Oh, sorry, I almost managed to kill myself with that. Oh, shall we?
Is that where we should leave the show?
Yeah, that's it from us. We'll see you all next week when hopefully Mick will have returned from... I've forgotten where he's gone.
I know, I've already used Trapped in the Phantom Zone. He revealed himself to actually be working for Hydra. And now we've got to find all the pieces of the Cosmic Cube so that we can retcon him back to being a good guy.
That explains why he's reading Civil War 2.
Exactly. He's the real villain.
Because then he's going to go on to Secret Empire, isn't he?
He's not. I'm sure he's going to finish Civil War 2 and then never read another comic ever again.
Yes.
I think that's the real reason he's not on tonight. Is he can't take comics anymore.
Possibly. Possibly. We'll see you next week. Until then, I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.